You're listening to Health Matters on Fox Sports 1380, presented by Integrated Rehabilitation Group. And now back to more of Health Matters with Maury Eskenazi and Shannon O'Kelly.
I love the music. It's Health Matters, Maury Eskenazi and Shannon O'Kelly. They say he was born for radio.
Yeah.
That's what somebody said. You were born for radio. It's a topic that's near and dear to our heart.
Absolutely.
As we try to pay attention to what we're talking about every second that we're on here. Joining us is Evelyn Riley. She is a clinical neuropsychologist. Are you impressed that I read that without screwing that up?
Yeah, that's incredible, Maury. Good job.
My pleasure. From Western Washington Medical Group, you're here to talk about ADHD. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the Northwest. You're new here a couple months.
That's right.
How do you like it so far?
I'm loving it. I love the water. Everett seems like a cool place.
The weather has been outstanding.
Yes.
I'm warning you, as it's kind of drizzling, it's going to be like this till, what, about April, May, maybe?
Right. We hope not, huh?
So the topic is ADHD. What is ADHD compared to like ADD? Is it the same thing or is it different?
Well, ADD is just a term used by the common public for attention deficit disorder. Uh-huh. But actually, the diagnosis is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and you can do it in two different categories. So the attention problems are one type. And so you would have difficulty paying attention to what other people are saying to you, not following through in instructions, not carrying through with tasks that need to be completed, difficulty sustaining through homework or boring things, those kinds of things. So that's one subtype.
Every time we talk about this, it's kind of like, I know. Why are you telling me this?
I know. So what you're describing is like lack of attention or inattentiveness.
Inattentiveness.
And
yes.
You can be inattentive, but you can also then be hyperactive.
Yes. Yeah, so then the second subtype is the hyperactivity impulsivity category. And that for children consists of running around excessively, not being able to sit still, fidgeting in your seat, impulsively making comments, no filter.
Isn't that Mitt Romney? sorry about that. I couldn't help that. Yeah. Okay, continue.
See what I'm saying?
Sorry, yeah.
You're working with Evelyn.
No,
so what's your diagnosis?
Wait, is this an intervention we're doing right now?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yes.
So good point.
Impulsively interrupting people.
Yeah. That was every report card I ever had, by the way. Okay. Continue. Sorry about that.
So, once you have the ADHD thing going on, you would either be primarily inattentive or primarily hyperactive or a combined type, which is symptoms from both categories. And then there's the criteria also covers five different other criteria that you have to meet to meet the ADHD diagnosis. And that would include having the symptoms before the age of 7.
Mm-hmm.
This is a neurodevelopmental process. And so currently, as it stands in the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, you have to have it before the age of 7. It has to significantly impact either your academic performance, your occupational performance, or your social interactions. It can't overlap with symptoms from other diseases. So or it has to be primarily accounting for all of the problem. In other words, a major problem with the ADHD diagnosis is that there is so much symptom overlap with other disorders, specifically depression and anxiety, two biggest ones, especially in kids. Because kids don't have the verbal skills or even the knowledge to express what they are feeling. Instead, they're going to be acting out. They're not going to be paying attention. They're going to be having a hard time in class. It could be that they just went through a divorce or they just moved or, all these other situational things. And instead, what happens is that the teachers notice it primarily first and, they are dealing with overcrowding in the classrooms and, we have a societal problem
right
at this point. And, boys are outdiagnosed as compared to girls by 9 to 1. So, I wonder as a clinician if we are pathologizing a large section of our male population.
Which means?
Well, it means that generalizing. I mean,
pathologizing meaning we're making them have a problem.
Yeah. Got it.
And where there very well could be no problem there.
Like
it's more of a...
Like a kid spouting off, running around here, take these and this is what you got, that type of thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, that these kids, they're going through possibly other struggles that we're not recognizing. Mm-hmm. And instead of dealing with those issues, which could be circumstantial, could be in their setting...
So it could be based on their home life or
absolutely.
Something going on with siblings, and then all of a sudden they're getting categorized in this ADHD or ADD.
As a biological basis for
this. Right, right.
As a neurobiological basis, where there very well could not be there. So if that's, you know, we're looking at a percentage rate of about 10% now, and this has risen from 3 to 7%. Back in the early 1990s, now up to 10% of children being diagnosed with ADHD. That's huge.
So let me just a point of clarification, I mean, attention-wise here. So you can have ADHD, so that's you have a problem with attention, and then you're active. And then you can also have just ADD, which is attention deficit disorder. Is that right?
Yes. Well, that's a colloquial term. I can't say that.
She's throwing out the big word at us.
Anyway, the attention part, it still falls under the ADHD diagnosis.
Okay.
You're just categorizing it. One side is attention and one side is hyperactivity, or they can be combined, and it's all called ADHD.
Okay.
So...
Is it you're saying that, you know, the difference between now and, like, say, the 1990s, is it because teachers and people are more aware of it now than it was back in those days? Because, you know, in the 60s, when I was a kid, seven and under, no one even talked about this.
Yeah, you just spent all your afternoons clapping racers, didn't you?
Actually, my nose was against the wall.
Exactly. So. They had a spot.
That's what I was doing.
They had a spot for you,
totally,
huh?
Totally, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, could that be a...
Absolutely. Okay. So increased awareness that it's out there, number one. We also all have access to internet and everything else.
Sure.
And, you know, there's actually a huge... portion of the research has been promulgated by researchers that have a strong pharmaceutical funding.
Oh, right. Interesting.
And a lot of my research, actually when I started this a few years back, I kept on seeing the same names come up over and over and over again in the research. And I was going, gosh, are these people connected? You know, what's going on? And sure enough, I was able to track down probably about a handful of researchers are creating the majority of the research. And actually, there's been a large investigation into this. The number one leader in the field is out of Harvard. So he's the number one expert in the field of ADHD research. And he's now been investigated and by Senator Grassley out of Iowa. There was a deposition, and it became an unbelievable uncovering of bias that was put into
funded by a pharmaceutical company.
That's right.
Interesting, because, you know, we're overprescribing medication, I mean, in today's world for everything. Mm-hmm. And I just saw a special, I'm not sure what show it is, one of those journalistic shows where these kids, Anadrol, is that it, Androl?
Adderall. Yes.
Adderall is kind of like the study drug.
Yes.
And, you know, kids are getting it and then they're selling it. So there's a problem created with all that access to medication.
Absolutely. There is a huge secondary gain issue when somebody presents for an ADHD concern. So comes into my office for an ADHD concern. You know, I'm looking at numerous secondary gain issues, one of them being abuse of stimulants, which the literature shows there's a ton of research on this at this point. But take, for instance, Advocate was a researcher that looked at college students in Louisiana, surveyed 1,500 college students, and out of those 1,500, 10% had an ADHD diagnosis, right? there were 43% outside of the 10%, 43% reported abusing stimulant medications.
Now, if you truly and if you truly have ADHD, ADD, I mean, whatever your diagnosis is, mm-hmm. the medication is actually going to help you.
Well, that's the thing about stimulants. It's kind of like caffeine. Mm-hmm. Caffeine pretty much helps everyone concentrate a mm-hmm. bit better, right?
Yeah. Well, I so wish I would.
Well, makes everything better, kind of.
Oh, it's tall. We tolerate it.
Yeah.
So anyway, stimulants do help whether or not you have an ADHD diagnosis. There is a myth out there that it's kind of this paradoxical effect. If you take stimulants and you have no effect, then you must not have ADHD, or vice versa. If you take stimulants and makes everything better, you know, you must have ADHD. That's not true. That is a myth.
Really?
Stimulants help across the board. It's not specific to an ADHD diagnosis.
Well, okay, so if it's not drugs, because drugs are not always the answer, what is the answer for someone clinically diagnosed with this problem? I mean, do you learn to control it from a behavior standpoint?
Yes, absolutely. I come from the viewpoint, anything that helps, let's do it.
Right, okay.
So, I'm not against stimulants per se, uh-huh. but I'm very cautious with the prescription because of the abuse and all these other issues that arise with stimulant use, including side effects, which can be nasty. What we're doing at Western Washington Medical Group is pulling together a treatment team. In other words, it should be addressed at all angles, and that would include psychotherapy mm-hmm. to look at what are the contributing factors as far as depression, anxiety, other comorbid disorders like personality disorders share a very high symptom overlap with ADHD symptoms.
It's complicated, isn't
it? It is complicated, and we're looking at a subset of attention and impulsivity problems. Attention and impulsivity problems are in numerous diagnostic or disorders. So everything from obsessive compulsive disorder to bulimia to gambling to substance abuse. You know, those are core features of those diagnoses also. So we're basically only treating a subset.
Right.
And in kids, that can be really bad if you're not addressing the depression and anxiety and it goes on. That's possibly why we see such a high rate of people never getting over this ADHD thing, even though previously we thought, oh, yeah, it pretty much dissipates by the time you reach adulthood.
Well, I don't think so.
But, right.
But, you know, I mean,
looking at you fidgeting in your seat, yeah. I'm wondering also.
You learn to live with it, actually. Yeah, they just put a microphone in front of you, basically.
But, you know, these kids, I mean, the point is these kids can be, they're very intelligent. I mean,
yes.
they can be very successful at school and do well in school and go on to have successful.
So learning the coping skills.
Right.
Are the youngest ages you're seeing?
In the literature, it's as young as 4, mm-hmm. and that they're putting on stimulants. So,
wow.
In
Is that
fact,
good, though?
Question.
Well, you know, I think there's an ethical and moral dilemma that can be looked at on that one. Because, you know, the long-term effects are questionable, and for sure there's been enough research to support adverse side effects, especially with suppression of growth that comes from stimulant use. I wouldn't be a proponent of that. And the other problem is, this is really interesting, is that if the stimulants are given at that young age, and they have these adverse side effects, a rare one would be psychotic symptoms. Mm-hmm. And so then the kids are added the medication of antipsychotics.
Oh.
So atypical antipsychotics, specifically things like Risperdal. And, and so now you have kids, and you can look it up online. And it's just bizarre to me that this is so young, because that's that's creating a lot of havoc for a lot of families. And these same researchers are currently in litigation.
Is it from parents who, you know, just won't let their kids just be kids? Did I say that right without making everybody mad? I mean, and let me move on to this question.
Drink out of a garden hose?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But how about the kids? I think I saw a special on this where it's the kids from five who have soccer on Tuesday and hockey on Wednesday and this mm-hmm. and that and this and that. And then they mm-hmm. get to college and their parents send them to college and they have nobody telling them where to go or what to do or where mm-hmm. to drive them. They're just all by themselves and they have trouble coping with that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so the lack of structure that they've had their whole life.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, very well could be part of the problem. And
right.
a lot of the parents are pushing the stimulant medications also for the adult, you know, the college
sure.
piece. And wanting their kids to succeed, you know, for obvious reasons, but at the same time, how does that help them in their future career? And the abuse of stimulants goes right along with abuse of marijuana and alcohol and, you know, all these other things. And that's a problem also, is that there have not been to date any research studies regarding the mixing mm-hmm. of all these different substances. So back to that one study, the Advocate study, of the 10% that had the ADHD diagnosis and were prescribed stimulants, 90 of those 10% had been asked to share their drugs.
Oh, wow.
90%.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a huge commodity. When I was in Detroit, I was interning at Henry Ford, and I had this guy, you know, I was on the psychiatric consult liaison team. And basically what that is you travel around to all the different departments and help out physicians in, you know, really tough cases. So I walked in the door and this guy looks at me, and I mean, he had already been giving everybody the hardest time ever. He looks at me and goes, "Don't mess with my medications." I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Bing, bing, bing.
So, I mean, you know, what are some classic, I guess, you know, thinking, I mean, as a parent, if you have a child that might need to be looked at or, you know, I mean, like you said, a multidisciplinary approach, what are some symptoms you might see in your children or your child that might lend you to think that they have ADHD?
Well, definitely all the attention and hyperactivity, impulsivity. So problems at school, you know, would definitely be enough to warrant coming in and having an evaluation. The problem is most people go right to their PCP, and that is great, but they don't have the time usually to spend, you know, investigating what is this depression, is this anxiety, is this something else going on in the environment, those kinds of things. So you're not getting the comprehensive evaluation that might be necessary. So that's why you would go to a specialist you know, look at all the different components. Is this really ADHD? And regardless of whether it is or not, those attention and impulsivity problems and hyperactivity need to be treated mm-hmm. with fine medications if you want to do that, but also with all the coping mechanisms, with looking at the environment, with helping the parents.
Mm-hmm.
There's some new research to show the efficacy of mindfulness training, which is quite interesting. And mindfulness training is a form of meditation that builds awareness of your body and space, awareness of what you're feeling, what you're hearing, what you're seeing, being present in the moment, instead of your mind racing to the next subject and next, and who am I going to talk to, and blah, 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 you know.
Wow.
Are you signing up?
I have a question. Aren't some people just a pain in the butt? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean, Tom. Yeah.
They're in the back of the class and they're disruptive.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with them. They're just a pain.
That would be another diagnosis.
Some people call it entertaining where I went to school.
And I don't
class clown.
Sorry.
Class clown.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's a pill that you take for being a pain in the rear end.
Right. No, absolutely not. So that's attention seeking rather than inattentive.
It said his sense of humor tended to get in his way. That was what was on my report card. Go ahead, I'm sorry. I mean, interrupt you.
So there is a high overlap with conduct disorder, which, you know, so kids with conduct disorder typically have symptoms of ADHD, but not necessarily the other way around. People with ADHD don't necessarily have conduct disorder. So conduct disorder is being defiant and argumentative, getting in fights, those kinds of things.
So with this multidisciplinary approach that you're advocating here, mm-hmm. that's what I'm hearing.
Yes.
What kind of success are you seeing? I mean, you know, because you're educating the whole family and the child and everybody
right.
involved probably.
Well, we are currently in the developmental phase of doing this. I just arrived.
2 months ago.
Yes, 2 months ago. And so we're working out the details right now, but the literature shows good results when you get all of these other pieces involved. So a comprehensive approach. My mentors at Dartmouth are actually doing the same kind of thing. So you're looking at first accurate diagnosis is very important, and then the psychotherapy to treat all of the other comorbidities mm-hmm. or other things going on, and then cognitive remediation, which is giving you coping skills and learning techniques and working with parents on parenting strategies, those kinds of things. So those three parts of it go hand in hand. And then the mindfulness would be part of that also.
You know, one more question. How are we doing for time?
We're good. Yeah, we're fine.
We're good. Okay. Yeah. So
we're going to alert the affiliates who might run a little over.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least you thought about it.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking as a parent, is there anything with this diagnosis or this diagnosis that might stay with the child and affect any kind of qualifications for down the road, college or academies? I mean, some parents worry about that or maybe hesitant to get their child looked at because you don't want this stigma.
Stigma?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the stigma is there, but I think that it's become so... you know, it's so well known, and you know,
there's so many kids that are going through this.
There's so many kids that are going through
this. It doesn't affect it anymore, right?
Right. And on top of it, with the IDEA Act, the Individual with Disabilities Education Act, that actually opens up the doorway to kids that have this disorder to get special accommodations.
Wow.
So that means increased test-taking time, isolated testing environments, note-taking. You know, it's incredible. In fact, the base rates for ADHD amongst children with disabilities has risen, at least on college campuses, from 2% back in the 1990s, and now it makes up 25% of the young adults that are getting special services.
And I've seen a lot of colleges will put that on when you look at kind of statistics that they'll accommodate ADHD. Is that
mm-hmm.
what they're talking about then?
Yeah, they are talking about that.
Yeah.
So that makes it another reason why it's really important to get the right diagnosis, because from a societal point of view, you know, here we are giving all these special benefits to the aid, and if it's very easy to feign.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is a very easy disorder to feign, and clinicians cannot tell.
Good point.
You know, part of it is weeding out, and that's been a problem with the research all along, is that the research includes people with feigning a disorder.
So there's no blood test.
There's no blood test.
No. Okay. Well, I tell you, it's we could, you know, I have a million more questions. We didn't even talk about adult symptoms.
You need to write your questions down.
That's what I was waiting for. So you're fantastic. I hope you can come back. We can continue this conversation.
Yes.
Evelyn Riley, from clinical neuropsychologist from Western Washington Medical Group. We also want to thank Rita Mell, a registered nurse and vaccine preventable disease program manager from Sahomish Health District. If I had ADHD, could I have just read all that I just read? That's crazy. We also want to thank Tom Lafferty, our producer, Karen Mork. We'll be back next week. Have a safe Halloween. Check your candy, kids. Check your candy for all those people. I'm Maury Eskenazi.
And I'm Shannon O'Kelly. Stay fit and stay healthy.
Health Matters. The content of Health Matters is intended for general information purposes only and is not a substitute for medical diagnosis or treatment. Individuals with health problems should always consult...